FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
This episode of the Financial Survival Network is brought to you in part by Sandstorm Gold Royalties. Sandstorm Gold Royalties is a different kind of gold company. They purchase royalties on select mining operations and receive a percentage of the revenue in return. Sandstorm now has a portfolio of over 185 gold royalties around the world. See how gold royalties differ from other gold mining investments at sandstormgold.com. That's sandstormgold.com. Sandstorm Gold Royalties trades on the TSX as SSL and on the New York Stock Exchange American as SAND.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. Today is 12/11/18. Well, Danielle Park is with us. Danielle, this year is almost shot. Hey, what better way to end the year than to talk about responsibility, personal responsibility, ethics, all those things that people don't like to talk about anymore. But first, as always, hey, be a part of the show and write us, kl@kerrylutz.com. So we're talking about ethics, Danielle. I'm thinking about ethics of the so-called self-driving vehicle, what I call the Sophie's Choice of electric vehicle algorithms. You're riding down the street, there's a truck coming right at you, and there's a bunch of kids crossing the intersection to the right. And if you swerve and run over a couple of those kids, you will save yourself. And obviously, poor children, some of them will perish. But if you protect the kids, you'll go head on into the oncoming truck and in all likelihood die. So can algorithms be trusted when lives are at stake? You can't trust them when your money's at stake, when your financial future is at stake. Why should you be able to trust them with your life?
You know, I'm sorry, but you just took my breath away with that example, Kerry, because you're not going to believe this, but when I was a child, a group of us were biking on the main highway to the local store, and as we were coming back, one of the kids crossed the road. His name was Timmy, and the other five of us stayed on the opposite shoulder. And as luck would have it, a major truck, a transport truck, came barreling over the brow of the hill, exactly as you described that.
Yeah.
And the truck driver was losing control, and he had a decision to make as to whether to hit the five of us or hit Timmy. Oh, and he hit Timmy. And I'm here today because he made that decision. So that's I remember that event vividly. I ran into a man who happened to be doing some electrical work at my home a few years ago, and we got to chatting, and it turned out that he was in fact the uncle of Timmy, and he and I have connected through that experience for the last number of years. But anyway, that's a total aside, but there is a point where I get what you're saying. That was a conscious decision of an individual, a human, as to which form of catastrophe he was going to inflict. And, you know, I think an algorithm in that case may have indeed decided the same outcome based on, you know, the less damage possible. But these are the decisions that I don't think human life is ever going to be without, whether an algo is making the calculation or a human. There's probably, I think, enough data to support that the algorithms will make more technically correct, won't be, for example, impeded by things like, you know, drugs and alcohol and fatigue, which is the lion's share of most of the accidents that happen are driven by, you know, inadvertence or some sort of incapacity of our faculty in that way. So I think algorithms will certainly have a better track record when it comes to those kind of things. But in those impossible decisions, you know, who knows if we'll agree with what they decide.
Yeah. And you know, the whole point of these self-driving, so-called self-driving vehicles is that they will program in every possible scenario that can happen, but I don't know how they balance life. Hey, look, there was just that incident. I don't know if you caught this one. I meant to send you the article. Guy in a Tesla driving home from the office party in California, and he passes out behind the wheel, and The car is driving along for 7 miles at 70 miles an hour. The police are following him, trying to get him to wake up, and they can't get him to wake up. And finally, they just go in front of the car and hit the brakes hard, and then the Tesla stops. So, you know, there's a case where this guy probably would, good chance he would have been dead if he had been just driving a regular car. So I guess we should chalk one up for Tesla, right?
Well, that's what I mean. These things are not simple. They're not going to be all good and all bad. You know, it wasn't all good when we moved from the horse and buggy to the ICE mm-hmm. engine, and it wasn't all bad either. So that, you know, it's there's give and go in all these evolutions, but I think progress continues to move forward, and for better and worse, you know, and there will be some upside for sure. I'm more concerned about the ethics of humans right now, if you want to bring up this topic.
Well,
the ethics of humans are crazy disturbing me at the moment.
Ethics are dead. There are no ethics anymore. Didn't you hear? Like an old song the New York Times said, God was dead. The ethics, like there's no risk anymore unless you upset the wrong people. But otherwise, you kind of do what you want. And, you know, it just... We're just devoid here. And so are we better off giving it over to the machines and programming in the ideal outcome for every event and leave it to them? Or how do we get back to ethical behavior? Certainly, ethics have been an endangered species on Wall Street for decades now, at least since 1987, but arguably even going back before. There was a time where, you know, the privilege that Wall Street received, they at least went through the motions of honoring it and of honoring their fiduciary obligations. But, you know, the average person now, Danielle, you ask them to spell the word fiduciary, they don't even know what it means, and they certainly can't spell it.
Or I think that many people don't understand what the big deal is until perhaps they're in a situation where someone had their had a very serious decision or power over you know, what happens with that person's health or with their finances, and then they discover that they were abused or sold up the river or treated in a reckless manner. And then what happens, and I don't think, again, this isn't going to matter whether there's an algo or a human at the sort of wheel of all this, the issue of damages comes up. Who is going to pay? And I think that we're heading into, I can tell people are already very dissatisfied and in a point of flux in the world, just with the volatility and negative returns we've had in 2018 in capital markets in the world, as an example, because so many things, you know, the S&P and the Dow have held up reasonably well to date, but there's many, many things which have fallen by 20, 30, 40, 50% just in the last year and two. And a lot of people's portfolios have been losing, bleeding money for the last while now. And they're looking for who to move to and who to blame for the losses that they're experiencing. And I know that should this continue into 19, which I think is entirely possible, that this will become a crescendo of blame throwing and who should be responsible. And ultimately, those who have been dealing with salespeople are going to learn that the answer is, when it comes to salespeople, it's your own risk. They didn't take on that responsibility. And then there's going to whole class of other people who are supposed to be fiduciaries, indeed held to that standard, who are also, I think, in for a very rough go, because there'll be so many losses that people will just try and follow money, insurance, anything they can to try and recoup. And I think that this is an era of abdication of responsibility on all sides. We have individuals which have abdicated responsibility, have turned off their, you know, their questioning, their
critical thought,
their critical thinking, absolutely, and because they wanted to believe in whatever fable was being given them. And you also have a whole, as we've said, finance industry, but also corporate industry in general, who are basically the Wild West right now with no personal accountability. And you see how shocked people are in the last little while when you had the head of Nissan, you know, be arrested for financial misdeeds and fraud and, you know, inappropriate expense claims and all this stuff. And then you've got the Chinese official, you know, the lady that's been incarcerated for these other allegations. Without getting into all that, the shock and horror of when a white collar person is actually detained and put in prison, it gets everyone's attention, right? Because they're all thinking, oh, come on, surely they have good lawyers, surely they'll get out. And I think as anger builds here, as losses mount, and as fingers continue to be pointed, the pressure is going to continue in favor of pinning it on individuals. In some cases, rightly so. And in other cases, perhaps just because, you know, someone has to be to blame.
Hey, that's funny because I was reading a book by Johnny Carson's lawyer. I mean, he's been dead for, you know, a long time, Johnny Carson. Since 2005, I think he died. In any event, his lawyer said he got a call from Johnny in 1987, right after the crash. And Johnny said, "Why didn't you get me out of the market?" And he said, "Hey, I wasn't your portfolio manager. I didn't manage your stocks. I had nothing to do with it." And there's going to be a lot of people saying to their brokers, "Why didn't you get me out of the market? You knew it was dangerous, and now I lost everything."
Well, you know, also not just their brokers. I think the, as I said, the professional managers, advisory consultants, all these people who have put people increasingly further in harm's way in the low rate environment of the past decade, just as seniors have got that much older, have become that less likely to ride out storms or wait for recovery in asset values. And I think that this whole issue of suitability around people who are in their 50s, 60s, and beyond is going to be up for some very harsh scrutiny. There's also already been a significant amount of case law. You know, someone said to me not too long ago, no one ever sues brokers. And I think when I came into the business of financial business in the late 90s, that was probably quite almost accurate that very few people sued brokers if things went south, if advice turned out to be damaging, if capital was lost. But I would say that 20 years later, that is no longer a fair statement. I think that it's become much more litigious. And there's, you know, not just now, the fact is that there's a lot of arbitration and settlements out of court and whatnot that goes on. But I do think there's going to be, as I've said, a resurgence of people looking for someone to blame for their losses.
Hey, everybody, you know, it's like when you're winning, you're a genius, you're so smart, it's all you. Then you're losing immediately, you're looking for the scapegoat. Not cool. You know, it just reminds me, and I repeated it
of Donald Trump and his talk about the stock market. That's
stupid. We talked about that, how that was just setting himself up for failure. But, you know, the old saying, Talleyrand said it about the French monarchy, that they learned absolutely nothing and forgot nothing. So that's what we're dealing with. It's like, it's not like this is new stuff here, Danielle. And one of my favorite sites on the web, and I'm sure it's going to be updated dramatically very shortly, is called thebubblebubble.com, which tracks every major bubble since Tulip Mania. And hey, while we're at it, we should have like a little gloat over Bitcoin. You and I discussed it many times about how ridiculous it was. And yet there are people out there, and I envision you people out there, Bitcoin traders, whatever, saying you're just like the tulip merchants of the 1600s. After the Tulip Mania smashed, it went to nothing. And you're out there saying, well, it's going to come back because tulips look really nice. You know, you could do a lot of great things with tulips and landscaping and different colors. And we're coming up with new hybrids. It's going to be great. It'll go back up. And I see these Bitcoin merchants in exactly the same mindset, because cognitive dissonance, they can't accept that the bubble popped and the party is over.
Yeah, that's true. But we've been in these multiple bubbles in so many asset classes that people have really lost all context. It's like they're lost in a fog. And, you know, it goes back to those themes are replicated and familiar. But the risk that people take on is why it does the damage. So, for example, the people who read something on blockchain or heard someone speak on a cryptocurrency and suddenly sold everything they owned and put all their funds into one of these cryptocurrencies, that was suicidal behavior. Whether they were putting it into stocks or corporate debt or speculating in whatever they were doing, it was always going to be a fatal flaw, a very bad decision, because there's no diversity, there's no risk management. It's all just wild, gambling style behavior. And when you risk things like your abode or your ability to feed your family by putting it all on a sort of a number on the roulette board, you're going to have typically... You can have a win, but that behavior in itself is going to end up being destructive. And I'm afraid that's what people have really come into. So if we talk about ethics, I think there's going to be not just a resurgence in responsibility and blame for the proponents of all this approach, but also, just people having to pay the price for their bad decisions. Like, as I said to you before, cryptocurrency may be a very extreme example of someone just like going to, card games or the casino and gambling all your money is a very obvious, shocking, people would say, oh, well, you were crazy to do that. But what I'm talking about is the more moderate people who believe that they are doing something relatively responsible with many of their high-risk financial decisions, egged on by an industry paid to sell them risk. And, even some of the commentators, and I bemoan this fairly often, even some of the commentators who see the sort of the forest for the trees, who talk about the risk, who talk about the insane valuations and the behavior that's been driven by a decade of QE and intervention from central banks, don't necessarily recommend anything to people in terms of how to control against the downside. In fact, they're keeping, a lot of them are still in the business of selling mutual funds or products that are fully risk exposed. And so these are the same people that were doing, call-in shows in 2008-09 when things had imploded and they were trying to tell people, well, it doesn't matter that you're down 70%. I mean, you're still getting dividends, right? So I just think if we don't get a V bottom, which I think we won't likely in the next recovery, because after credit busts led into real estate busts, the recovery period tends to be long, not like quick fix, several years. And I think during that period, that's when you have an opportunity for people to sort of get the memo on behavior, whether it's through personal loss, whether it's through prosecution, jail time for some. Just having to take hat in hand and realize that they made a lot of dumb decisions. And I think that is ultimately where some behavioral change can evolve and hopefully learn something from the process.
Yeah, wouldn't that be a switch? People actually learning from your mistakes, learning from your errors, and learning from your losses. I always say you really only learn from your failures. You don't really learn anything from your mistakes other than how to spend, from your successes, other than to how to spend money and make yourself feel good. But you don't really grow as a person from your successes. Only if you build on your successes and go from one and that teaches you something to the next. But just to be fat, dumb, and happy isn't going to work. And, it's just, I've been in that mindset where the market goes up a huge amount in a day and I feel like, gee, I really did something good here, but I didn't do anything. It was just the market going up, had nothing to do with me. And, holding on to your money, return of principal or return of capital rather than return on capital, right? Return of investment rather than return on investment.
Yep.
In this type of market, it's a lot more important. For sure.
And also, we're heading into a time, I think, when we're going to get a lot of buying opportunities all at once, because everything went up together in the last few years and is now coming back down together. 90% of the world's asset classes have been falling year to date. So we're going to get so many opportunities likely on the other side of this, but it'll be in, you know, things like real estate, and it'll be probably in corporate debt and equities and commodities even, and all sorts of things at once. And the issue is who's going to have the liquidity and the plan for executing when everyone else is running around with their hair on fire. And that's really going to be the test. So who's got the ethics to actually structure their financial decisions, practices, and choices in a way that will sustain them through this next rough patch and then be able to continue from there. Unfortunately, not that many.
Yeah. There are going to be a lot of casualties, a lot of roadkill along the way, and really a lot of it is avoidable, but bad government policies combined with bad individual behavior is what got us here. And unfortunately, like you said, the lessons are learned very hard, and then they're soon forgotten.
Aided and abetted by academics like, for example, Janet Yellen, who today is saying, you know, now that she's left the Federal Reserve, that there's some huge holes that concern her in the financial system. You know, she helped to dig those huge holes in a very substantive way. And it's not till she leaves office that she's now speaking about them. So I think, you know, what accountability will we hold these officials to is the next question as well.
Yeah, well, she's like the guy in Casablanca, the cop. Oh, there's gambling here. I'm shocked. You know, and all of a sudden she's shocked now that she's not responsible for it. Is it that she just got off the ivy, came out of her ivory tower, or is she now free to speak her mind, what she really thinks? Hey, that's a whole another topic for another show. Anyway, make sure you check out Danielle's site, jugglingdynamite.com. Check out our site. Write us, kl@kerrylutz.com. Twitter feed @KerryLutz, Facebook page, Financial Survival Network. And if you're listening on YouTube, please subscribe, like, and share. Danielle, we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks, and good health. Stay warm. It looks like it's getting cold.
Thanks, Kerry.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.